Welcome to another installment of the Evolution Exchange podcast. My name is Christopher Asbridge. Today I am joined by Fritz, CTO from Hive Streaming, Anton, CTO of Boca Direct, and Gabriel, founder of LifePal. We're here to talk about being a CTO and the growth pains around this. But before we actually get into the nitty-gritty, let's do a round of introductions. Fritz, would you kick us off, please?
Sure. I started out, I got a PhD in California on the west coast of the US. And from that standpoint, it was kind of a mix of scientific visualization. And then I switched into, this was the time of the web becoming popular, into that. I left there, joined Symantec via a startup that got acquired by them, and then left them to a startup that was based in Mobi TV. It was video streaming and combined those. And as part of that, I worked with the R&D team that was based in Stockholm, which has really kind of created my process eventually, 10 plus years later, to move to Sweden, working with a consulting company here initially, but then an opportunity came up and I'm now working for Hive Streaming, which is a peer-to-peer video distribution company that kind of takes everything I've been building the whole time along and leverages it. During this whole time, I've kind of been bouncing between doing technical leadership, like an architect, and being more of a manager. And so this is kind of, from my standpoint, I've never been on one side of the house or the other, always bouncing back and forth.
Oh, fabulous. Thank you very much. Anton, we'll come to you next.
Sure. I'm very glad to be here. I'm definitely the one with the least experience, so really looking forward to this discussion. But as you said, I'm currently the CTO of Boca Direct, and almost my entire career as a software developer and now CTO has been at Boca Direct. I came in as the third developer at Boca Direct when it was basically just a small startup around a single, you know, desk in a shared office space. And now we're 35 plus developers, and I'm for a couple of years have had the CTO role. I'm also from the West Coast, but West Coast of Sweden, so not as glamorous as Fritz. But I have a university degree in software development. Really looking forward to this discussion here.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Anton. And Gabriel, last but not least, introduce yourself, please, mate.
Thank you very much, and I'm very glad to meet you guys and also for having this opportunity. Yeah, so I'm Gabriel. I work as a software engineer for over 23 years. As Fritz, I also have a computer science degree, a PhD in computer science, and I focus a lot on compiler engineering. I believe that is my forte. And throughout my career, I worked mostly as a consultant, so on project basis. And I had the chance to work with Apple, Adobe, Citibank. And in 2013, I came to Sweden. I imagined that would be a very short project, but it ended up being like some kind of passion. And I decided to stay here for the long run. So in Sweden, I worked at Electrolux, and then I joined Lifesum as well. And after that, I started my own company, so Shortcut Sweden. And in 2022, I left the company, and I reflected after creating lots of solutions and software for lots of other people, why not create what I want to do, right? that was a question. Can I even do that? Create my own idea? So I decided to create LifePal, and it's pretty much an AI companionship for Apple Vision Pro. That is a new device. So now I'm looking forward to enjoying and getting to know everyone here.
Amazing. Thank you very much.
Hi, everyone. This is Chris Bennett here, the Nordics Managing Director here at Evolution. We're committed to doing recruitment in a different way that adds value to both our clients and candidates by providing you with amazing speakers and leading edge discussions on what's going on in the tech scene at the moment. There are three reasons why you should contact me. If you would like to speak on a future podcast, if you are interested in hiring awesome tech, data, product or gaming freelancers for your business, or if you are looking for an exciting new organization to work with, please get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope to hear from you soon. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Now, we've established the context of each other, and we're all here being CTOs or past CTOs, and we've all established a challenge of growth pains and literally the pain of being a CTO when you're trying to grow. Now, I've asked you all to bring some questions, and Gabriel, what we'll do, we'll start with your question. And you brought a question saying, in addressing organizational growth, what strategies have you employed to balance innovation and operational stability within your respective tech teams? Fabulous question. Would you mind just giving us a little bit more context, please?
Sure, I can. During my career, I had lots of technical leadership and CTO roles, and one pain that I had was when we needed to scale up and grow, and we had a large team and we needed to balance innovation, right, and operational stability. What do I mean by that? Is we need to ship. Now you have people consuming, right? No longer in beta. You have real customers. You have a customer support department there, and you don't want to piss them off, but you also need to grow, to keep innovating, right? So some challenges that I felt was, how do you keep that process flowing? You understand how you keep innovating, delivering top quality stuff, but also you keep the operational stability growing and keep that exciting for the teams, right? So that they don't end up joining Spotify or whatever other company. Does that make more sense now? I hope so.
Sure.
Go on, Anton, I'll let you jump in there.
Yeah, sure. It's a very, very interesting question and something I've been thinking a lot. We've grown quite heavily since 2019, where we were acquired by a private equity firm, and they really wanted us to grow as they want to, and we really wanted to grow as well, of course. So a big part of that, of course, is hiring a lot of developers to do everything you want to do and to really enable that. And it was definitely a lot of pains, as you say, Christopher, around that growth part. And I felt it really in the time that was kind of taken away from your best and most productive developers, because they're the ones who kind of have to onboard new developers, especially if they're more on the junior side. So you have to spend a lot of valuable time kind of teaching up these people before they can deliver. Not only just introducing the system, but spending a lot more time in code reviews, because all of a sudden you have, you know, five more developers producing stuff than before. And I mean, parts of that, I think, are almost unsolvable. It's just a part of growing. I'm not sure how you would work around it. And it kind of solves itself with time as people get more comfortable in their clothes and start producing code that you know will be of good quality. But something I really tried to focus on was, you know, enabling them to have the responsibility and also the tools to make their team work. We've always been very developer heavy. There's been, you know, 15 developers to any product, other product role, and we really try to have those developers feel the responsibility for the whole product, not just the tech side.
And I think I would want to touch on what Anton said as well, is I think this is actually a problem you want. And the reason I would say that is that I think I've worked with startups where we wanted to get it perfect and that startup didn't make it. And that was a lesson learned for me, is that you need to push things out before you're ready. And then you get the customers and then you address the fact that, oh, we didn't build it right. It's also something I feel like has changed over time. So when I worked at starting out, we ran our own data centers. But today, you don't run your own data center. You're using AWS or Azure or Google Cloud or someone else. And that means that some of that scaling actually is a lot easier than it was previously. So.
What are your thoughts there, Gabriel?
Sorry?
What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I believe I agree. It is a problem that you definitely want to have. And how I have addressed that was actually trying to find balance, like prioritizing innovation as well. But that is hard as a CTO. Sometimes you cannot convince, right? But I believe you need to foster this dynamic environment, right? You need to say, okay, if we cannot have R&D, we will not innovate, and therefore we will become normal, right? We end up doing the same as the competitors. So we need to try. At LifeSun, I remember we tried a lot of AI things like predictive tracking, trying to evaluate what the users were eating and things like that. Those facts, I believe, also are very beneficial for the engineers to keep on pushing boundaries, right? Okay, what we don't know. So let's learn, let's innovate so that we can bring value to the product itself. So, but I agree, it's a problem that everyone wanna have, right?
What would you say is a good way to push innovation within tech teams?
For me?
This goes out to the whole table, yes.
Yeah. I can try to share. I believe it's all about the culture you set for the team. Like if you hire people who are not just they just wanna write what is following some specification, right? But you wanna hire creative people, ambitious, that they wanna bring their own ideas. So I would start by building that culture, and then when you hire the developers, also don't have agile methodologies that they must just be doing ticket after ticket, and then when they are exhausted you start a new sprint, but that you give time for innovation as well, like to see okay what can be done and so on. So I believe is this mix, like you building a culture, hiring people with that type of quality, and also living up to that once you work together. That is in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that you mentioned recruitment. It's a very, very good point to bring up. It's obviously so important, especially when you're small and as you're growing, because every person will have such a big impact. Like you say, a big focus on the culture seems very important. And it's something I have almost placed more, you know, priority on than the current coding of ability, just so the team itself has a way of working together that makes sense and that aligns with each other.
I know a good way to sort of improve that culture and even in innovation is hackathons. And there's so many good companies now that I've dealt with over the years that had a bit of a, I don't want to say a poor engineering culture, but it wasn't the greatest. And then they implemented like hackathon weeks, where it was just a 4-week dedicated just to show off and have some fun. And like it sounds cliche, but order a pizza in and everyone just sits down and has that effect on each other. And that's quite wholesome. That helped out a lot of companies that I know. Fritz, looks like you're going to say something.
Well, I'm going to go back before you talk about the hack days, because I think in addition to the culture and the people is an aspect of alignment. And this is something that I've seen, especially as you grow as a company. It's the allowing, because it's very easy to say, oh, what's a technical problem that's kind of interesting or something from that standpoint. But what you really want to help get the engineering teams is to understand what's that business problem that we're solving for our customers and make that more obvious. And as we grow, that's actually harder because we have less contact with customers. And so making sure that we've got that alignment across the organization really becomes key. And then that enables a lot of innovation and, oh, okay, now I'm coming up with ideas that are applicable, that aren't just, oh, we did it and then we had to throw the product away because we didn't really understand what we were building. So.
Yeah. And I think also going back to recruitment and the culture, one thing I've noticed and tried to get a mix of is I always tend to ask developers in a recruitment process if they see software development as something, you know, logical and mathematical or something almost artistic. And I don't think either of them are, you know, better or worse than the other, but I think you need a mix of both. I'm guessing with your background, Fritz, you're more of the mathematical guy maybe, but the kind of, you know, the ones who see software development more as something almost, you know, it's creating some piece of art can really help you with the innovative parts as well, I think.
I was just going to say, Anton, that I'm actually a musician as well. Nice. And so many software developers have some form of artistic part as well. And I think there is a blend there.
Yeah.
Yes. Same here. Musician as well.
That's okay. Nice. We can start a band.
Yeah, let's do that.
Right. Okay. I'm definitely not taking vocals, but Gabriel, this debate answer your question in a round of sense?
It does. And I got lots of different insights as well. So thank you, guys.
Oh, fabulous, fabulous. What we'll do then, we'll move on to Anton's question. Anton, you mentioned that you wanted to go through how do you approach risk management, the trade-off between time to market and for new features, security, stabilization, staff members, basically looking at the costs and the risk of losing people. Do you mind just digging a bit deeper for us?
Yeah, for sure. It's something I've been thinking a lot about the last maybe half a year as my company is kind of in a process of really maturing and taking those, you know, final steps away from startup to, you know, a mid-size company. And this process, the more we've been doing it, you know, implementing policies, writing guidelines, you know, governance frameworks, it has dawned on me that being a CTO is a lot about risk management and risk analysis and deciding, okay, this is a risk, but we're willing to take it to build this thing quickly, or, you know, to kind of I don't know what it can be, but anything, your every decision you take as a CTO is almost a pros and cons for whatever the risk might be, which might be just okay, we don't have, you know, 5 quality assurance people, so we're risking more bugs, but we're saving money on those staff costs. Or it might be, you know, we're doing we're doing auto scaling, but we're not going to allow it to go to more than 20 servers because that might, you know, really impact that cost. I guess most things comes back to cost, either in time or money. But as we grow, it's something I notice more and more that it really is a risk assessment type of work in a larger company. And it would be interesting to hear what Gabriel and Fritz think about it.
Do you want to go, Fritz, first?
Sure. I would say that some risks are very easy and not so easy. So one of the companies I worked at, we actually were hosting telecasts of NFL Live type of thing. So this was a huge scaling. We had to kind of handle that. And we had a single data center. That was a huge risk for that, even though it worked for our other business. But as we expanded to that, we had to realize that the risk of that, we had to have 2 data centers in order to do that. And that adds a huge amount of cost and complexity when you go from one to another. But the opportunity there, we wouldn't have that if we didn't have the ability to kind of fail over in that situation. And so that's where I would say it's often these risks. And sometimes we have to take that and say, oh, yes, it's worth that. It's going to cost a lot. But then that's what we kind of do from that standpoint. And so I feel like a lot of those as we're doing that. And from there is some risks. I'm going to try to take this back and merge it a little bit with Gabriel's earlier one. As we're trying to grow the company type of thing, there's often risks there because it's a different type of risk. It's what is the risk of the culture? Because as you grow, that culture may morph. And how do we make sure? I've been with companies that have doubled in a year. And when you're growing that size, to keep that core that you had there and maintain that really requires finding key individuals. At least that was my experience, finding key individuals who can kind of promote that culture going forward. But I'm sure there's multiple ways of doing that.
That is right. One factor in my experience, because I had lots of situations, as you said, Anton, and what I try to do is always to understand the severity of each risk, right? Okay, is it that we are going to have to work over the weekend, okay? Or is it going to ruin the business, right? Or cause legal compliance flaw and things like that, or secure data leaks or things like that. So I would kind of do a risk assessment, right, to evaluate. And once you have that, I would actually describe that with your team, because you did not read the whole question out, but I saw that also risk of losing people, right, in that case. So one technique that I have used and actually super powerful is actually to involve the employees. So once we kind of evolved into like, okay, now we are a bit more mature instead of a baby startup, and I had lots of risks. I just came with the team and say, hey guys, we are screwed now. Now we have more responsibility. What should we do? You understand? Instead of, as the CTO, you imagine that you should bring all the answers and everyone who listened to you discuss that. And then we started having dynamic discussions and finding solutions. And I felt that brought the team together. So it was actually the opposite. Before, it was very cool and so on. And then it became more stressful, but people enjoyed more because they decided together. Okay. So maybe the idea, instead of transforming that risk and that decision into something that could ruin the culture or also lose staff, you could combine that, making them part of the procedure, because that way you guys are together, right, into that. So that is one solution. And then the trade-off related to go to market and so on, I would say will be within this matrix that you make. Like if you see, okay, very low risk, but very high opportunity, so maybe you take that. And one technique that I have applied is to kind of define clear processes, like example for engineering. So we do code review, we have CI, we have documentation, whatever, stuff like that. You need to define that with your team. That'd be a little bit or a lot. Just have a definition, an agreement, what you guys stand for. And related to security, stability, I believe hires, penetration tests and things like that, you understand, create as a habit, organize as part of your budget. I believe that you'll be safe in that approach. Yes.
Yeah, I really like the point about involving the whole team in the risk assessment and risk management to really, I guess, both spread the knowledge about the risks and why we maybe need some red tape here and there, but also to find solutions. It's a really, really interesting thought, for sure.
Yeah. It's easier to agree on doing something if you know why, right, you are doing, than if you say, oh, I need to work Friday evening. Why? Because that guy wants me to. No, oh, because we want to deliver it and have no problem. That is the difference in mindset.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity.
Sorry, Fritz, go on.
Out of curiosity, how many of your teams are operating the systems and building the systems at the same time?
Sorry, do you mean operating as in, you know, the infrastructure?
Yep.
Well, at Book Addict, it's very much, I guess, what used to be called the DevOps ways of working right now. Not every developer also works in operations, but the ones who do work with operations are part of the, you know, more regular dev teams as well.
I would say, I think that becomes very interesting from a risk perspective, because I would actually say engineers now understand a lot about risk as a result of that comment that you, Anton, is that it is very, most days today, we are operating it and building it at the same time. And that means that we understand risk sometimes too much, because that can make someone a little bit conservative, but yeah. It's a great thing, because it's much more obvious and it sets the balance in the right spot, because we are kind of, oh, we need to innovate, but we also need to think about how to maintain it, make it runnable, operate it.
Yeah, I really like that the devs, you know, themselves are responsible for the way their, you know, code and their logic also impacts the operations and the platforms. It's hard to ignore a CPU spike if you're the one responsible for it as well.
Exactly. Okay, and I'm just going to bring it back down to sort of the risk and look at the stability of the amount of employees and people leaving. What would you say is the biggest factor for developers leaving an organization? And this goes, again, to the whole table.
I can maybe share, because I was part of, I left so many companies, so maybe I can take from my perspective as well. So I left companies when I felt misalignment. So as Fritz said, if you, there's no purpose, why am I building this feature, right? Why are we doing that? But if you know, okay, we are doing this because we have this goal or a purpose or whatever. So that is one way. One way also why people leave, one reason would be bad compensation, right? If you don't give fair competitive salaries and so on, that will be a recipe for disaster, because if they are good, they'll find better offers, and then will be very hard to keep. I also believe if you don't keep it challenging, like create a good career path, opportunities so that they can grow and build new skills. In that case, you will keep only the bad ones that are in comfort zone, that they don't care about growing, so they will stay. But the smart ones, they will leave because they want to grow, right? They want to become better. So in that case, and I also believe having always a blend of people, not only senior, not only junior, and so on, different levels, so that they can mentor, they can start building clusters of knowledge and spreading knowledge. That is one reason that some developers, they left. Even when they came to apply to work at my company, they said, oh, I left because everyone is on the same, right? We don't have any progression here, right? So that in Sweden, at least, most developers, they will leave more for that reason than for the salary, which is actually odd, but it's true. And I also believe what would be the culture. Like, I've been in toxic cultures where people just blame and they have no idea how to work together as a team. So I believe, like, in summary, if you have a good culture, involve people, you actually make decisions together, right? You have the psychological safety where people can fail and you evolve, you pay well, at least in a way that you won't go bankrupt, right, in your company, but you can keep that, and you make it exciting, give opportunities for people to grow. I believe it will be hard to leave employees in that case. That is in my opinion.
I think those are great points that you bring up, Gabriel. I want to add one thing that we've been kind of doing as well, because I think the progression or having some form of that. We've gone and really we wanted to not use the idea of a ladder. We wanted to think of it as a career experience. And one important aspect for that from our standpoint was identifying that I've been with companies that make the mistake of, oh, just push someone to be a manager of people. And that was something that we really strongly wanted to capture, is that there's really, we see it as three different roles: an individual contributor, and you can become really, we want someone who's really adept and really strong and senior on that. But also catching someone who's more, they're not a person manager, but they're more like a tech leadership type of thing. And that requires a lot more, it still requires people skills, but it requires much more of the technical side of it. And then the people management. And so we saw three different kind of paths, and people might move between them over their careers as well. So
I agree. Not just promote because you need to, of course, find the best progression for that individual. Exactly.
Anton, any closing thoughts there?
No, I think that was a great discussion around that subject for sure.
Okay, fabulous. Right, Fritz, we'll come to you for the final question. And you came speaking about the software industry is well placed to support multiple different working styles, PC office versus remote versus single location, multiple locations. How do you weigh the benefit / disadvantages, and what happens when the inevitable expectations are necessary? Exceptions, sorry.
Yeah, so what I wanted to capture with that one is, as we grow, having one site or having, like I've worked where maybe we do a little bit of outsourcing, maybe we're expanding in geography type of thing, so that, and one of the reasons that you expand in geography is, oh, well, we want to expand our talent that we kind of opportunities. And so often that's does that, but then COVID hits, many people working from home, and that offers differences from that standpoint. So that's where I wanted to kind of capture. Where do you see some of those changes, and what are the challenges, et cetera? And I would say, actually, people tend to, oh, well, we're focused on office, but oh, this really key person moved. Well, we'll make an exception for them. And so that's what I wanted to try and capture in that question.
Exactly. I can try to answer if that works. So based on my experience, I would say we'll never have a one-size-fits-all solution. That is a recipe for disaster. And what I tried to do was pretty much to build the policy based on their needs. I can explain what I mean. Lots of companies, they did not hire like a fantastic engineer just because, oh, this person lives in Berlin and we work in Stockholm. And then you end up hiring someone mediocre who cannot do the job just because lives two blocks from the office, right? So that is a mistake, in my opinion. You should see, okay, would that person be fit like a glove, like culture-wise, tech competence, and so on? So why not? You understand? So if I would start a company and be CTO now, I would start flexible. Doesn't really matter. If you be a good fit, why not? That is my idea. And related to how to overcome potential challenges, I believe the most difficult when everyone is actually working remotely is that to build a team, right? So you need to have better onboarding. You need to have good procedures, like have a FICA Slack channel or whatever, where people, they get to go together, have trips where you actually meet in person. Maybe during the onboarding, that person will be at the office and things like that. So the challenges will be just to adapt, and also the fact that you have different cultural differences, right? Maybe someone from Brazil, someone from Spain, right? Different India, Sweden, they will not speak the same language, right? In that sense. And also personality traits, tone of voice, and things like that. So I believe that as a CTO, it's kind of your job actually to group everyone together and say, hey, here, this is how we play the game, guys. And if you want to be part of that, you need to comply with the rules, right? It's the same as when we are playing Monopoly and so on. You cannot create your own rules. You play by the rules that you are given. And it will be the same here. You just define that, and then you bring people who are ready for that. And then once you hire, you kind of do your best effort to get everyone together and to feel part. And for the ones going to the office, maybe you tell them to get closer to the ones remotely, right? So they feel part of the company and have events and so on. There's a friend of mine, he's CTO in a company now in Norway, and they have lots of people working remotely, and they feel very close together. They meet 2 times a year, everyone, and they have a lot of fun. So I believe that can work, you understand? Because the same way you can have people going to the office and they don't engage, you understand? They don't interact. So I don't believe going to an office is actually the solution for that problem. But as I said, it will be always a blend and a trade-off that the CTO will have to make, right, in that case. Yes.
Yeah, I think at Bokedekt, even before COVID, when I kind of started out and we hired the next people after me, and like you said, Fritz, just to expand on the available talent pool that you have, we very early said, okay, let's also, you know, open the door for developers who live in Uppsala or any of the other, you know, neighboring cities to Stockholm, and be open towards working from home, you know, 1 or 2 days a week. So even before COVID hit, we had that culture and that way of working, like you say, Gabriel, in place. And then when COVID hit, it was very natural for us to be completely remote for a while and then slowly come back to the office. You know, after that, it's been very much, you know, almost a 50-50 split between people who are always in the office and people who are basically never in the office, even if they live in Stockholm. But I think, like you said, Gabriel, the one thing we really learned is how hard it can be to onboard people remotely. I mean, we basically didn't have any good onboarding process for the ones who were in the office. And then remotely, it just... it's very easy to feel forgotten then, I think, as the remote employee. Yes.
And I think that's one of the challenges as well sometimes with the remote is getting them to open up, because when you're at the office, that's very natural and part of that. But the more remote you are, the harder that can be. And so finding those opportunities of creating spaces that, or ties between those who are at the office and out, is a great idea there as well. So.
Yeah, and spreading the culture remotely can be quite difficult. I think it's one of my main things I like about Bokedekt. One of the reasons I've been here for so long is that we have such a good culture, and that's most easy to see and experience in the office, obviously. But you want to bring in people who sit remote to have that feeling as well. And I think as Gabriel said, having some sort of, you know, meetup quite often is a very good thing there. We try to just have an after work for the people who live nearby Stockholm, you know, once, twice a quarter maybe, and that does a lot for, you know, actually creating a group of people that feel like a team.
I think it's changed a lot over the past 3, 4, 5 years or however long COVID was. This was a big catalyst when you're looking at remote work versus on location work. From my perspective, I can see that shifting back a little bit. We're seeing companies saying, hey, you can be fully remote or you can come to the office 1 day a week. That's becoming a lot rarer. We're seeing a lot more companies saying, hey, listen, no, we want you in the office 3, 4, 5 days a week now. And that is a common, very common thing compared to what it was 2 years ago, where it was like, yeah, fully remote, no worries. But then at the same time, you look at the labor market, where it was 2, 3 years ago, and it was a scarcity of developers across Europe. now, unfortunately, with the layoffs that's happened over the past 18 months and the sort of technical depression that we're all seeing right now, we're seeing a lot more labor being available in our home sort of sites. And that, again, changes the whole balance all over again.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think one, you know, disadvantage or incredibly hard thing to do with remote, which is, would be interesting to hear what Gabriel and Fritz think about it, is the kind of water cooler talk, the quick back and forth, the just throwing ideas to the wall. You can do it over, you know, Zoom, but it doesn't really have the same feeling to it. That is the one thing I can really miss and feel is a negative thing with remote work.
Yeah. So I think one of the interesting things from my standpoint on that was the startup that I worked at that Symantec bought. This was back in early 2000s. And what I would say is that things have matured a lot since then. And at that time, I would say working remote was really hard. We had one individual who was located in Arizona, and all of us, the rest of us, were at the office. And that individual made it work. So this is where culture and people can make things work. That individual made it work because we had an IRC channel, and he was on there all the time and very interactive. And that's what really made it work. And it wasn't like a Zoom channel. It was IRC at that time. And that was how it works. And I think it can work in those situations, but it does require more from the individual then. So.
Exactly. I totally agree. I believe having things like pair programming, you understand, like use a Discord server that you have a channel where people can jump in. So you don't need to book a meeting, right? You can just go there to that pair programming room or whatever you see that things are happening. I believe that makes easier because when you need to book someone, you already decide not to do that. It will be like, oh, too much hassle, right? So of course we require that individual as well to take the initiative, to don't become isolated, to be part. But I guess you can also add some procedures like the pair programming, you understand, things, or code review where you guys do it together and discuss brainstorming sessions and so on. So I guess like it is a combo, creating procedures that will kind of enhance and give the opportunities, but also the individual need will have to take initiative and join and participate. Yeah.
Fabulous. Fritz, do these all statements reflect nicely on your question?
Oh, yeah. I think they're great answers to the question.
Awesome. Do you have any closing statements just to round off?
So to round off, I think we've talked about a lot of very interesting things covering both the risks, the challenges with growth, the way that we're kind of doing this all together. I think that's, to me, the software industry is constant change, but it's an exciting time to be here. There's a lot of things that are changing from that standpoint. And we didn't even touch on one of my other questions, AI. Everyone's talking about it, and it's so totally constant in everything today. So it's a great time to be in tech.
We do have another 5-10 minutes. We can have a little we can open that bag if you want. We've got time to.
Yeah, we can do that. I can share some reflections related to AI. I believe that in life, always evolution. I remember when the web came, right? I was like, oh my God, what will happen? And then mobile and now AI. I believe we need to leverage, right? We need to verify, okay, what tasks can we optimize, right? What can we do so that we can maybe have more efficiency at work. We can maybe mitigate risks, right? And things like that. So I see with a lot of excitement from my perspective. I don't see it as a threat, like saying, okay, no developers anymore. I would say if that would be the reality, we'd all be farmers by now, right? Because things start to evolve and we adapted, right? We created new professions, we created new ways of doing work. So it'll be the same natural progression, right? Maybe we'll type less code and we'll use more VR devices, right? I don't know what will happen, but for sure, some kind of evolution will come. And the idea is just to embrace, you understand? Okay, embrace AI, not because of a trend though, but okay, what can I actually leverage to my use case? Similarly to what we have spoken before, innovation and alignment within the company, right? If you wanna use AI just to put in your pitch deck and so on, that will be a bad idea. But if you wanna use that to actually bring value to your customers, that will be a good idea to do. Yes, that is my take on it.
Yeah, it's a very exciting time for sure. Like Fritz said, in tech, not only AI, but the AI is definitely a big part of it, or machine learning, whatever you want to call it. And you know, at Bokadict, we spent the kind of the last year preparing for that. We spent time, you know, building a great data lake or data warehouse, and because it is trickier to use AI and machine learning models than you might first think, and you definitely need to massage the data a lot. And obviously, all the rage right now are about large language models, which I guess will just continue exploding. But there's so many other models that are interesting. And for us as a booking company, it's a lot about prediction and those kinds of models. So I'm very excited with what value that can bring for the company and what fun projects it would mean for all of the developers.
Exactly.
And I think it's two parts to the fun. One is there's the aspect of it's another tool in the toolbox that maybe it just makes us faster, speedier, et cetera. But there's also the aspect for us, large language models isn't really related to our product, but there are other aspects, as you just mentioned, Anton, that, oh, prediction or other aspects where that is so core to what we're doing and so much part of that constant innovation that we talked at the beginning of the podcast. So from that standpoint, great.
Okay, fabulous. Well, chaps, I really do appreciate it for jumping on the Evolution Exchange podcast. I'll definitely take the moment to say, Anton, Gabriel, Fritz, I greatly appreciate you taking your time out of your extremely busy schedules and digging in deep to some quite painful areas of being a CTO, and especially the world that we're working in at the moment in time. So greatly appreciate you jumping on the podcast. Thank you very much for joining.